I remember when I was planting the church in the community where we were doing that, and it was so frustrating because we weren't seeing many people come to know Christ, because the conversations were always the same. They're trying to convince me I'm a good person. And they're trying to give me this picture of, if you take all of my good things and all of my bad things and you weigh them out, like, I mean, my good outweighs my bad, you know, 10 to 1. And it was usually true. I mean, our community was full of some great people, but it doesn't work that way. So we try to explain, yeah, but it's not by works. It's by God's grace, and it's a gift, you know, but we couldn't get them to see their lostness. And I'm like, they're never going to get saved because they can't understand they're lost. In prison, it's the opposite. They understand the overwhelming lostness that they have and the mistakes that they've made. And so it's like, that's apparent to them. Many times their question is, you know, would God even want me? Would he even take somebody like me? I'm so flawed and have such a history.
Welcome to the Empowered Manhood Podcast, where men rediscover courageous masculinity. Pull up a chair as we gain strength from the stories of God working in the lives of ordinary men today. These men have discovered that in a world of superficiality and isolation, we need authentic brotherhood to gain strength for the battles we face every day. Brought to you by the ministry of CLC, which challenges men to an uncommon pursuit of Christ, welcome to Empowered Manhood. Hey folks, welcome back to the Empowered Manhood Podcast brought to you by CLC. My name is Mike Hatch, and as usual, I'm here with Chris Bollinger. And Chris, man, it's good to be back with you again.
Great to be here from the Florida office.
Yeah, I was going to say, if people can't see the video, obviously, we're doing this over Zoom, but you've got a bright red office that is
right.
In fact, as I look at my face in the camera, I've got a red hue on my face from my computer.
It's too red. I'll have to tone it down for the next one.
Yeah. So you are in sunny Florida. You left me up here in gray, rainy Western Pennsylvania.
Yeah. You know, sorry about that.
I know. It's all good, but it's good to be back with you, man. And make sure if you're listening and you're getting any value from this podcast, we would ask you go on to wherever you're accessing this podcast, whether it be Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Stitcher, wherever it is. If you could go in and give us a 5-star review, that just means so much to us. It definitely helps to move us a little bit more to the top in terms of certain recommendations. Plus, as you're looking through podcasts, typically I know I do this, I look at that. That's one of the first things I look at when I look up a podcast. How many, does it have 5-star reviews? How many are there? Are there any written reviews? It's super, super helpful. So as we're trying to spread this word about empowered manhood, and it just helps to spread the word when you do that. So please do that. Or just share with a friend. Definitely share with a friend. So, all right. So today, I'm excited. We've got David Derry with us today. And David is a former pastor. He's also a missionary with CRU, or Campus Crusade, for those of you who may know it that way, Campus Crusade for Christ, and has done a little bit of work as well with Family Life, but is now focusing primarily with CRU on prison ministry and through a curriculum called Stepping Up. And that's actually a book that was written by Dennis Rainey, and he's using that curriculum now in prison ministry. He's also done work with, you know, family ministry, like I've talked about before. And so we're really excited to have David Derry with us. So David, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Definitely. So let's start as we always do. We want to hear a little bit about your story, David. Tell us a little bit about your fence post story, as we say, some of those significant moments in your life that kind of made you who you are today and led you to where you are today.
Sure. Thanks. So I basically grew up in a Christian home. I was one of those guys that went to church every Sunday, and even 9 months before I was born, I was there every Sunday. So, you know, blessed in that regard to be from a family that was devoted to the Lord and to the church and those kind of things. But I would say so I accepted Christ at an early age, like a couple of weeks before I was six, I was actually accepted wow. Christ and was baptized and so forth. So, and really stuck with that, you know, through all the years. I'm not one of those guys that in the teenager college years kind of like, you know, straight away and has this whole other, you know, story and then came back or whatever, which that's always cool too, to see how God redeems that. But that wasn't my story. I was always faithful all the way through. But when I was
that's really boring, David. That's really boring. Can we just,
yeah.
Is there something we can dig up? I'm kidding. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So the summer between my sophomore and junior year, I was at summer camp. And that was where I would say that God really got my attention and got a hold of me. And I kind of realized that our family was a family that, I guess, to an extent, kind of went through the motions. Like we were at church every time the doors were open, but it was just kind of because that was what we were supposed to do. It wasn't because we were madly in love with Christ and completely and devoted to following him wherever he might lead. It was just kind of like, this is our habit. This is what we do. And again, that's a good habit. And I was blessed to have that. So that summer is when I made a commitment to the Lord and basically said, you know, this is real. This is my life. This is what you're calling me to do. And I'll do anything that you ask me to do. And so he kind of spoke up and gave me the first assignment right there on the spot, saying that he wanted me to start a Christian Bible study in my secular high school. So I was like, oh yeah, like anything but that maybe. But so anyway, I went back in the fall and inquired and jumped through the hoops and we did that. So another friend and I kind of led that through my junior and senior year of high school and trained some underclassmen to take it over. And it continued for quite some time. It's been over 30 years now since I graduated high school, but it went on for a period of time. I don't know exactly how long. So I moved on to college with that, you know, same mentality of I want to impact people and do ministry on my campus. So came into contact with an organization there called Baptist Student Union, and got involved with them to do outreach on the campus, quickly became one of the main leaders and then the president of that organization on campus. So spent my college years really doing ministry as much or more than I was taking classes and being a student. I was really focused on, you know, sharing the gospel and the hope and help of Christ with college students. And then again, between my sophomore and junior year, spent a summer doing some ministry work. And that was the summer where I really felt God nudging me to make that a vocational thing instead of just, you know, volunteering and doing ministry, which again, we need lots and lots of people everywhere doing that. But felt like God was kind of tapping me on the shoulder saying, this is what I want you to devote your entire life and every waking moment to. So again, I said, okay, and began pursuing that right out of college, became a pastor and have been in ministry now, I think it's 27 years. And it's been a really cool journey as God has, you know, kind of tapped us on the shoulder multiple times to say, okay, I've got something else. I have another step, another leg of the journey that I want you to be a part of. And my wife and I, now 23 years that we've been married, have always said yes. I mean, we've argued from time to time a little bit, God, are you sure that's it? But eventually we've said yes and stepped out into the next thing. So it's been quite an adventure and we wouldn't trade it.
David, you left being a pastor to join Family Life, which is part of CRU, which used to be called Campus Crusade for Christ. Right. What attracted you to Family Life at the time? What did you feel God calling you to do that caused you and your wife to leave a role as a pastor and join that ministry?
Yeah, interesting question, and there's an interesting story to go with it. Really what it was is in the 17 years that I had been pastoring, my wife and I had known about a dozen pastors and their wives who had really struggled in their marriage, unknown to us in most all the cases. And so what had happened was, as unfortunately so often does, something would just completely implode and a pastor would be leaving ministry or resigning a church because his marriage had totally crashed and burned. And so on every one of those occasions, we were just completely shocked. I mean, some of them were what I would consider some of our best friends. They were people that we had known for a long time. They were people that we really looked up to. We were, you know, pretty young getting started out in ministry. So many of them were couples who were older than us. They'd been married a lot longer than us. They had kids who were older than us. And we were kind of looking up to them going, okay, you know, if we can do things as well as they're doing them, because they just looked like they had it all together. We're like, you know, we just kind of want to be like them and kind of follow their pattern, because they really are doing all of this well, ministry and family and all this stuff. They've got it together, until we found out that they didn't, because they resigned their church and they're in the process of getting divorced. They've been struggling for years in their marriage. And we were like, oh my gosh, we had no idea. So after this happened a dozen times, and 10 of them, by the way, did get divorced. And most of them never did ministry after that. Two of them, you know, took the high road and worked through things and, you know, struggled through it and went to counseling and fixed it and, you know, and made it. I think one of them is back in ministry. The other one is not. But anyway, after that happened that many times, my wife and I, there were several things going through our heads. One of them was a personal question that we were asking each other. And that was, is this going to happen to us someday? Like, is this just what happens to people in ministry? There's a lot of stress and it's a very time consuming. You're kind of on call 24/7 and your family often has to make huge sacrifices. And we're like, is this going to be us someday, where we wake up and look at each other and just say, we're done. And, you know, we said to each other, well, no, I mean, that's not going to happen to us. And, but the thing that really haunted us was, I'm sure if you ask all these couples, you know, 10, 15 years ago, they would have said the same thing. That's never going to be us. But at some point the road diverged and they took a path that I don't even know they knew they were taking until they woke up one day and realized, you know, how did we get here? So that was one thing, was we were saying, you know, what is it that we need to be doing? You know, where did they miss it? Where did they take a wrong turn? Because we may have to back up the road here a little bit if we're following them and figure out where to go a different way. But the other thing too was, is there something that we could have done? Were there signs we should have recognized? Were we not good enough friends? Like, what kind of things could we do to help everybody around us? Because it wasn't just pastors this was happening to. It was happening right to a lot of people that we knew. But the fact that, you know, it was happening to a lot of pastors, we were like, this is a problem. Because every time that happens to a pastor, there's a whole congregation in this huge wave, if you will, of people that are impacted by that. So we were like, if there's anything we could do to avoid that from happening, even to a few people, like we would invest time and energy into that to try to change some of these stories. So we were kind of on a quest, if you will, to figure out these types of questions. And that's when we were introduced to Family Life through a Weekend to Remember marriage getaway that we signed up and went to. And through that weekend, not only did we get our questions answered, like, this is what you're supposed to be doing. This is how you're supposed to be doing this. And it wasn't like rocket science. Like, we didn't come out of there going, man, I had no idea.
Right.
It was pretty simple things that we're just like, you know, we don't really do that, or we could definitely do that better. So it was kind of more of a fine tuning thing for us, but we were like, okay, we get what we're supposed to be doing here. But we also heard from Family Life that no matter who you are or where you are, you can be reaching out to impact and help and mentor somebody who's coming behind you in this same marriage thing that's just hard. So, I mean, we were like, we're in, that's what we want to do. So we didn't know initially if we would, you know, volunteer in some role with them while we still pastored. We didn't know if we would come on staff. But again, we just kind of like put all the cards on the table and said, God, you just show us what part you want us to have, but we definitely want to be a part of helping invest in marriages, you know, especially initially of pastors and things like that. So that was where we kind of began to make that turn, and God made it clear within a number of months that we should apply and come on to full-time staff to begin impacting marriages and families of those around us. So that's evolved over the years how all that works. Impacting pastors is still one of the things that's really on our hearts even today. But that was how we got involved with all of that initially, was just those painful experiences of watching one more friend, you know, their marriage fall apart and their marriage and their ministry crumble, and them exiting and just thinking, oh my gosh, we don't want to see that happen to one more friend of ours.
Yeah. So at what point, because what you're doing now, you mentioned this before coordination with the Stepping Up Ministry, which is based on a book by Dennis Rainey called Stepping Up, A Call to Courageous Manhood. Tell us a little bit about how you're introduced to that and how that kind of evolved in a sense into, unexpectedly, it sounds like for you guys, into a primarily a prison ministry now.
Yeah. Yeah. So when we joined staff with Family Life, the Stepping Up resources came out right about that same time. I think we committed to join staff in the fall of 2011. I think Stepping Up came out in 2012. So it is a book that's, you know, kind of a standalone book that you can just read through or, you know, study through, just a trade book that Dennis wrote. And then along with that, Family Life developed, I think in 2013, a couple of video resources. One was a men's event. We no longer have that particular resource, but it was like a one-day event that guys could do. And we also developed a 10-week video study, and that's the one that we still have and use a lot, and it's the one that we've used in prison. So we were familiar with that resource pretty much right out of the gate when we were coming on staff. And we used it. I used it with a lot of guys initially. And then in Arkansas, I think Dennis Rainey actually went in and helped lead the study with some guys in a prison there. Somebody had the idea, you know, what if we tried to do this study with guys in prison? And they were like, you know, Dennis is always like, well, yeah, let's try it. So they went in and tried it. And it was amazing how well the guys responded to it. And so as some of those stories were told about, you know, we went inside a prison and did this with guys, and it was really, really impactful and life changing for them. You know, then some donors gave money to Family Life to cover resources so other guys could do it. And it, you know, sort of began to pop up here and there around the country. So as we began to get involved in that story with a prison here in Ohio who decided, you know, heard about it, decided to do it. And they reached out to me towards the end of their study, and they said, would you be willing to come down here to southeastern Ohio and kind of speak to the guys, like do like a graduation ceremony, encourage them, give them, you know, kudos for getting through this 10-week study. It was about 50 guys that they had who had gone through the initial study. And they just wanted me to, you know, shake their hands, give them a pat on the back, hand them their certificate. So I said, yeah, I mean, I'd be glad to do that. So went down that day and did that. And I have to admit, like, I mean, I have never been around prison in my life. And so going down there, and this particular prison is a little bit more old fashioned. So walking in there, and it was kind of a cold, dark feeling, these huge iron doors that slam shut behind you. And it was a little intimidating to go in there that day. But the guys I met on the inside, these inmates, were some of the coolest, most appreciative people I'd ever met in my life. Cause I had ideas of, man, this must be what, you know, guys in prison are like. And I, you know, I didn't know if I was going to get beat up or I didn't know what was going to happen, but I'm like, I guess I'll go in there and try this. But the guys I encountered in there were, it was just great. I was like, I really enjoyed my time with them. And so anyway, then from that, the guys who were in charge of prison stuff for the state of Ohio heard about that study, and I connected with them, and they said, we really want to use this resource in every prison, every men's prison in Ohio. Can we do that? So we began to do that a number of years ago. And so I've helped a lot of chaplains and volunteers in Ohio prisons. And then eventually, Family Life needed somebody to coordinate it even for the whole country. So for several years, I did that for the entire 50 states, where I would help guys know how to start studies in prisons with inmates and stuff like that. So it was a cool part of the journey for sure. And yeah, very unexpected, because prison was not something that's ever on my radar. I'd hardly ever known a person who ever went to prison. So I was like, wow, this is a different type of ministry that I never saw myself doing. But we began to do that quite a bit and spend quite a bit of time on it.
Hey guys, this is just a reminder that the Empowered Manhood podcast is brought to you by CLC, or Christ-Led Communities, where we help busy pastors multiply their impact by engaging the men in their church through relational discipleship. My name is Mike Hatch, and I serve as the National Relationships Generator for CLC. And if you're a pastor or ministry leader out there who would like to learn more about how CLC can help you and your ministry, please contact me. Reach out to me at mhatch@clchq.org. That's my email. Or you can visit our website at clchq.org. And now let's get back to the interview.
Hey, David, let me take a step back and let's talk a little bit more about stepping up. Obviously, Dennis Rainey didn't write it for guys in prison. It works very well right there. And we can talk more in a minute about why it works well there. But can you just describe, I've never seen Stepping Up. Can you describe kind of the layout of it? You know, what does it focus on? Why does it work well with men? And then maybe you can talk about why you think it works so well with men in prison.
Yeah. So the reason Stepping Up was even created, I guess, is important to talk about, because when guys go through Stepping Up, which is a men's resource, they love it. And at the end of it, they usually ask the question, you know, what else do you get? What other kind of studies do you guys have for men? And we're like, oh, we don't really do men's ministry. So there's lots of great groups out there that have tons of great men's ministry. It's like, we don't really do that. So the reason that Stepping Up was created was really for two reasons. One was that Dennis, one of the things that he was passionate about and that he noticed was that guys weren't stepping up. I mean, that's where the name came from, is when guys had the opportunity to be courageous and step up and step forward to do something, they would often just sort of like take the easy way around it, or they would fall back in accepting that responsibility. And so that was something that really bothered Dennis. And one of his favorite questions to ask guys when he meets them is, what's the most courageous thing you've ever done? But for a lot of guys, I mean, they're standing there scratching their heads going, I don't know if I've ever really done anything courageous. So that was one of the things that was kind of rolling around, I think, in Dennis's mind when he saw the need for this. And especially too, in when it comes to marriage and stuff like that, when we do weekend to remember events and other things, it's often the wives who drag their husbands in there to be able to invest time in their marriage for that weekend. And they joke about, like, we can see the skid marks down the aisle where some of you were literally drug in here by your heels, you know, kicking and screaming, because you're like, no, we don't, our marriage isn't that bad. We don't need to work on it. But the wives know that you do. So like, they're the ones leading, going, we need to work on this. We need to have a better marriage. And Dennis was thinking, man, it ought to be the guys who are leading, saying, hey, let's go spend a weekend working on our marriage. And the other thing that I think Dennis realized was the reason a lot of guys struggle in this area is because of the example they had as a dad. So if they had a dad that was present, maybe he didn't step up and do these things well to teach them how to do it. And in many cases, they didn't have a dad. Their dad was absent. They were raised by their mom or another family member or something like that. And so the term that we kind of eventually adopted for some of these guys was boys who shave. They look like grown men when you look at them physically, but it's like you kind of realize pretty quickly that below the surface, it's like this is not really a man that you're talking to. It's a boy who shaves. It's a guy who might be in his 20s, but you know, he's living with his parents and he doesn't work a full-time job, and he just isn't stepping up to embrace manhood because he just doesn't understand what he's supposed to do. He doesn't know what his responsibility is. He doesn't know how to be courageous. So those were some of the things that were going on that Dennis was like, we have got to address this issue. So that's where Stepping Up really came from. And so the 10-week study that's been the most popular and impactful thing that we've done, it allows guys to take 10 weeks, which is a good amount of time to develop some new habits and really get into it. That was the problem with the one-day event, is you can get a group of guys together for 6 or 8 hours, and they all leave like really excited with good intentions, but then by the next week or two or the next month, like, they kind of forgot everything from that one big challenge that they got in one day. But over 10 weeks, they develop some habits and continue walking through a process with other men that really begins to shape them and change who they are. And so they walk through a lot of different topics. It's a video-based thing where they're hearing teaching and content from a lot of different godly men and scripture. And then they've got discussion that they're doing with each other, kind of the iron sharpens iron thing happening through some real genuine discussion. And then they've also got, we don't call it homework because probably guys would just, you know, cringe at homework, but it kind of has a hiking, rock climbing kind of theme through it. So what is really homework is called logging time on the trail. So we ask guys during the week to log some time on the trail, doing some different activities and thinking through some different things. And we only ask them to do it 3 times a week. So when you are working with churches that are used to small group studies, they're like, well, there's 7 days in a week. Why is there only 3 days worth of stuff? And the answer is, you know, many of these guys who need to go through this are guys who probably wouldn't get 7 days worth of stuff done. And they're guys who kind of have a pattern of falling short and falling down and failing at stuff and having people point it out to them. So we said, if they can just get 3 things done during the week and they can come in the next week feeling like they've succeeded and they've stepped up to this, you know, so we kind of lowered the bar almost, if you will, to say, if you can just get this done 3 days a week, then you've succeeded, versus coming in and going, man, I only got 3 out of 7 done. So I failed again. Like, that's less than 50%. We didn't want that to happen. And there are some additional things. A guy who is really an overachiever, there are some extra steps in there that he can do if he wants to. But if you just can get your 3 days of logging time on the trail done, then you've succeeded and completed everything that's really required for that week. And so as guys go through it, it's amazing to see the difference and how their answers begin to change. And as the light bulb comes on of like, I didn't even know that that's what a guy was supposed to be doing, or that's how we were supposed to treat people, or I just didn't understand our responsibilities of how we're supposed to step up to lead, and even what that looks like. Because a lot of guys think that leading is, I can do whatever I want, everybody has to do what I say. It's kind of an arrogant, like, yeah, I have to be loud and I have to yell at people and throw somebody, yeah, up against the wall. And it's like, no, it's not about that at all. It's a servant leadership thing. It's doing what's best for your family that they're going to benefit from, but it's accepting the responsibility of that. So you're carrying the weight and shouldering the burden that your kids and wife shouldn't have to, because you're the leader. And if it goes well, then you might get credit. If it goes badly, then you have to accept the responsibility of the choice you made didn't work out. But so it's just being that leader and being that guy, whether you're a husband or a father, or whether it's an employee or whatever it is in any aspect of society, stepping up to embrace what a man should be according to how God designed us. And most of them, you know, they have no clue. So their answer, one of their responses is, I just wish somebody would have told me this, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 60 years ago. So getting to guys when they're younger to do this is our goal. Cause I mean, that's the saddest thing, is hearing a guy, which I did. I sat with a guy who was 80 years old in prison who said, I wish somebody would have told me this 60 years ago. Like, think about how my life would have played out differently, you know. But so when a guy is, you know, 20 and he's going through this and he's got a lot of chances to do this right, you know, earlier in life, that's what's exciting, is to see the light bulb come on and him get it at that point.
Man, David, that, wow. So I have so many thoughts and questions right now, but I want to point something out and just get your thought on this real quick, because as you were talking and sharing, you know, when you first started out, you talked about your time with pastors and ministry and how pastors and marriages were failing, and it was really, yep, surprising and discouraging. And now you're in these scenarios with guys who are in prison. And I just had this kind of, you talk about prison ministry, and I've got these two like arrows coming out from prison, one being the man who's incarcerated and the other being the man who might be a pastor who's in a marriage that's struggling. And the reason I think about this kind of is that, you know, the guy who's incarcerated is probably painfully aware, to some extent, not everybody, but for the most part, painfully aware of their incarceration and being in prison. The pastor in a broken marriage might be painfully unaware and kind of oblivious, potentially. The guy who's incarcerated, because in a sense, as Jesus said, that he maybe understands he is poor in spirit, maybe it comes to gain a sense of freedom as a result of that reality and truth and appropriating God's grace in his life. Whereas the pastor who's who's teaching and preaching and trying to disciple on a regular basis might actually be in bondage to some extent because he's not as aware of that and maybe assuming too much of himself and his own ability. So I'm just curious, that came to my mind as you were sharing. Does that strike you as true?
Absolutely. Yeah. And one of the things that, I don't know if it was the first or maybe the second time that I was in prison, that I think it was the second time, because the first time I went in and I told you how I really enjoyed these guys. I was like, man, if the door opens up to go back to prison, like I'd love to do that. That was kind of fun. I think it was the second time that I walked away from that prison experience. And I put my finger on what it was. And it's part of what you just described is, I said that the reason I really love and enjoy spending time with these guys in prison is because they're the most free people that I've ever met. Like, they're physically incarcerated and they're not allowed to leave, but they've found a freedom, particularly those who have found a relationship with Christ, because there is freedom in Christ. But even, you know, there's guys in prison that have not found Christ yet, but all the cards are on the table. Everybody knows it's like there's not these hidden secrets because everything's been revealed and they've worked through a process of shame and regret over choices. But there's this freedom. And I said, you know, they're more free than almost anybody that I know on the outside who is walking around in bondage with a mask on, trying to hide. And they're literally locked in this invisible prison that people don't see. And you can't have a real conversation where everybody's just open and honest and upfront and transparent about what's going on. So that's what, and every time we go in, I say the same thing. I'm like, man, these are real authentic people that you could just sit down and have a conversation with. And they know their brokenness. They understand, even those who don't know Christ, when you're sitting and talking to them. I remember when I was planting the church in the community where we were doing that, and it was so frustrating because we weren't seeing many people come to know Christ because the conversations were always the same. They're trying to convince me I'm a good person. And they're trying to give me this picture of, if you take all of my good things and all of my bad things and you weigh them out, like, I mean, my good outweighs my bad, you know, 10 to 1. And it was usually true. I mean, our community was full of some great people. But it doesn't work that way. So we try to explain, yeah, but it's not by works. It's by God's grace and it's a gift, you know, but we couldn't get them to see their lostness. And I'm like, they're never going to get saved because they can't understand they're lost. In prison, it's the opposite. They understand the overwhelming lostness that they have and the mistakes that they've made. And so it's like, that's apparent to them. Many times their question is, you know, would God even want me? Would he even take somebody like me? I'm so flawed and have such a history. But yeah, what you described is exactly true, because pastors in particular, we always referred to it as you live in a glass house. So, or you live in a fishbowl where everybody's standing there looking at you, tapping on the glass. And I mean, if you admitted the struggles you were having in your marriage or in your personal life or with your kids or whatever, like if people knew the truth of what went on behind closed doors, you're afraid that, you know, you'd be fired and unemployed. So you it's not safe. Like, you can't admit what's really going on. And it's not just pastors. It's a lot of people in the church. So you walk in on a Sunday morning and say to the average person, hey, how you doing? They're like, oh man, we're great.
Yeah, and praise the Lord.
All those pastors that got divorced and left ministry, the last time I saw every one of them before that, they all told me stuff was great. And then the next thing I know, they're getting divorced. I'm like, whoa, hold on. I saw you 2 weeks ago. You told me everything was great. And they're like, well, you know, the truth is we've been struggling for 10 years and, you know, we switched churches 3 times hoping stuff would be better and it just gets worse, you know, and you're like, well, dude, why didn't you say something? But that's the reality, is they just feel like there's nobody they can talk to or turn to get help. So yeah, they're not free at all. Whereas the guys in prison, while they're physically incarcerated, like most of them have experienced freedom and a fresh start and a new beginning, because I mean, they're kind of at the bottom looking up. So they're like, I have nothing to lose. And so it's just so invigorating to walk alongside of somebody who's going, there's nowhere from here except up. Would you try to help me find my way out of this? And it's just so fun and enjoyable to do.
Yeah, David, awesome. In one of our divorce podcasts, we looked at the numbers, and everything you've just said about pastors and people in church is backed up by all the numbers. We looked at, you know, people who got divorced or separated 3 months after they looked at their church attendance. They looked at their involvement in small groups. They looked at their involvement in church leadership and involvement in church-based community ministries, and compared them to people who had healthy marriages, and the numbers were identical. I mean, virtually identical across the board. In some cases, the people who ended up separating and divorcing had better numbers. They were more involved in small groups. So, you know, you just can't tell because, like you said, people don't want to, they're uncomfortable. They're afraid to admit in the church population that they're struggling, whether it's in their marriage or some other part of their life. And the other thing you said about guys in prison reminded me of two things that are related not to incarceration, but to addiction. My wife spent years on a worship team with a Celebrate Recovery group. And she said she never experienced better worship because everybody in the room, you know, was, you know, they admitted that they struggled with alcoholism or struggled with drug addiction or whatever it was. And they were in the process of recovery. And they you mentioned freedom. They freely worship God. You know, they were outed. They were exposed as an addict, right? But you know, it didn't matter because you know they recognized God's role in their life and how they were on the road to recovery. Like family life and their curriculum used the, on the trail. You know, you're on the trail. You're moving in a positive direction. And let's take a few more steps. And Mike and I went to an addiction recovery center in Northeast Ohio, what, a month or two ago. Same thing, Mike, right? I mean, you know, you talk to the guys there and they're real people. They're authentic, you know, they don't have to hide the fact that they're fighting addiction because that's why they're there.
Right.
And so once you get past that, these are the most authentic guys you're ever going to meet, right? They're celebrating their victories. They're excited about their future and God's with them. And they tell the most amazing stories about how God's working in their lives. Stories you don't typically hear, you know,
We talked
to one guy, we hear this amazing story. Then we talked to the next guy and he's got an even more amazing story. I mean, it was just, you know, it was one of the highlights of my life, just going to this place for a couple hours. So yeah, it's just why can't we be like these people? I don't want to go to prison. Right. I don't want to go to addiction recovery, but maybe I need to, you know, just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's been the experience that we've had now every time we've gone in. And so, you know, during COVID, we've been locked out this whole time because they won't let us back in. We're getting close now to getting back in. But every time we tell people, like, you know, we can't wait to go back to prison, like they laugh because it sounds so funny. But it's like, no, they let us out, you know, at the end of the day. But it's like we've missed time being with a lot of people during COVID because everybody's been so isolated. But we're like, the people we've missed the most are those who are incarcerated because it's so refreshing and invigorating to spend time with real people. So it's like, that's what we want to get back inside there to rub shoulders with these people again, because they're our favorite people on the planet, really, you know?
All right. So Dave, man, this has been an amazing conversation. Thank you so much for your perspective and for the experience that you've shared with us that you've had working with men in prison. I know there's more that we want to talk about. So we will definitely have you back on, especially to talk about some of the marriage stuff that you're doing with regard to the prison ministry. That sounds absolutely fascinating. But until that time, how can people reach out to you if they want to contact you, if they want to find out more about your ministry? Praise God. Maybe they want to support you financially. Where do people go to hear more about you?
Yeah. So, I mean, like most people these days, there's about 27 different ways, you know, you could connect, but the easiest way to probably do that would be to go to our webpage, our personal webpage that we have, because it tells a little bit about us. There is a way to contact us there. There is a way to give financially to, be a part of the ministry or to help, you know, with the next event we're doing in prison or things like that. So that's probably the single best place to start. And that is just our last name, Derry, D-E-R-R-Y, familylife.com. So just Derry, familylife.com. and they could do any of those things there. We could start a conversation. They can click a link to give, you know, whatever they would want to do. So that's probably the best place. We have a Facebook page, email, all those things, but we could connect those dots, I guess, once they reach out to us from the website.
Sounds good. So the website, dairyfamilylife.com, we'll include that link in the show notes. And then you said you're also accessible on Facebook as well, but probably the website would be the best way to initially start a conversation and learn more about you. All right,
yeah.
Dave, man, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it. And we look forward to our next conversation.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks so much, guys.